And welcome to Friday, June 1st, 2007. And here's today's audio cast from AvWeb, the world's premier independent aviation news resource. Today's report is brought to you by Aviation Consumer. I'm Mike Blakeney. Today, Eclipse Aviation President and CEO Vern Rayburn speaks with AvWeb Editor-in-Chief Chad Troutfeder about the status of the Eclipse 500 program, and he also reflects back on some of the problems the company has encountered along the way. But the various setbacks haven't diminished the demand for Eclipse's very light jet program. With the company logging a 180-aircraft order at the European Business Aviation Convention and Exhibition last week.
Can you tell us a little bit about the eBase show last week and how it was for you guys?
eBase was a tremendous show for us, and I think just as importantly, maybe even more importantly, it was a great show for the entire industry. I think what we're starting to see is real, valid, hard information that the market for corporate aviation outside of the United States, which has traditionally dominated corporate aviation to the tune of certainly 70, even 80% of traditional manufacturer sales, the market for corporate aviation is really starting to explode around the world. And that's just great for this nation and this industry, because this industry and this nation leads the world in that. Now, I think the other really fascinating thing is, in spite of, as usual, some of the normal prognosticators who say, never been, can't be type of attitude, I think we're starting to see that the role that the VLJs are going to play in that kind of explosion is going to be a very, very significant role. Because, again, if you had to, if you will, describe or characterize what VLJs are really about, it's not just about a smaller airplane. It's about an airplane that's a lot more valuable, meaning that you get more for your dollar or your euro or whatever currency you're using. And particularly, I think the order that we booked at eBase for the 180 aircraft into Turkey is a perfect example of that, because Turkey just doesn't have a lot of aviation, and yet this is at a price point that suddenly it makes sense to start offering services that have never been able to be offered before. So eBase was a great show, again, for the industry, but especially for Eclipse Aviation, because I think we started to see validation of what we've been saying for several years, which is the potential market outside of North America, outside of the United States, is going to be huge.
Well, actually, an interesting aspect of that is the dollar is falling. Is that a problem for you guys?
No, we don't see that as much of a problem, since all of our contracts with all of our vendors outside the United States are dollar-denominated. We're isolated from currency fluctuations. It does, though, make the product somewhat more attractive on a retail side of the equation. So it's just a little bit easier for people, given where the dollar is versus where their currency is, to buy a dollar-denominated aircraft. And all of our transactions are in dollars. We don't re-denominate the transaction into local currency.
I guess that's actually better for European conversions, because the rates are so lopsided versus the dollar right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, it does put a company, although we don't compete directly with them, obviously, a company like Dassault at a little bit of a disadvantage to a company like Bombardier or Gulfstream, because they are building their aircraft in euros, but they're ending up having to sell them in dollars. And so but this isn't a new problem for international companies, and all of the aerospace companies are international companies, and there's lots of ways and techniques that you manage this. But it's just like you've seen, I'm sure, all the articles with the Memorial Day weekend having just passed, that are predicting a record level of European tourists in the United States this summer, because it's frankly just so darn cheap for them to come to the United States. It's cheaper to come here than it is to go to other places in Europe. So we're going to see a real influx of folks, whether it's in New York City or Atlanta or, of course, Disney World or Los Angeles, wherever the case may be.
Getting back to Albuquerque, you guys are doing the aero mods on the 500. How's that going, and when do you plan on cutting that into the production line?
We're virtually through the certification program now. All the engineering drawings have been released. The aircraft's fully conformed. And we'll be cutting this in on serial number 39, which is actually coming down the production line right now. And so we'll see that first aircraft in a production mode with that within the next month or so.
And how is it performing as estimated, I guess, versus actual?
It's performing as actual because, before we finished this, we actually proved that the mods made the difference. This was not a design exercise that was all done analytically. We actually configured the aircraft, two aircraft, and flew both those aircraft very extensively before we even started the certification program, and proved to our satisfaction that the aircraft does exactly what we've told our customers that it does, and even to the point of flying a precise NBAA IFR profile from Albuquerque to Florida, and showing that we had not only the range, but the speed and the fuel capacity.
You guys are also working on Avio NG. How's that going, and where are you in the process of that?
NG is making great progress. Most of the components are now TSO'd, so we have most of the technical risk. We still have some of the components left to go through their TSO process, but that's about on schedule. We have slipped approximately 2 to 3 weeks, and so it will be more like mid-August as opposed to mid-July before we finally see the first airplane delivered. With that, though, we are not scheduling the production cut-in until an airplane in sometime in September, and I don't remember the exact time on that right now. So fundamentally, it's going well. There's no huge technical problems. It's just a big project, and so it's experienced some of the slippage that you oftentimes see in these things. But when you look at the overall schedule, that slippage is measured in single-digit weeks, not in months or like our, in the past quarters and years.
Where are all the boxes going? I know you guys had a pretty tight space up in the front behind the panel. Is it all staying inside the pressure vessel?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, if anything, it's a little bit easier. There's a little bit more space with this installation than with the Avidyne installation. And it's because of how everything was repackaged. And the reality is the maintenance is going to be easier. One of the downsides of the Avidyne solution, it was a highly integrated solution. So if you actually had a radio go bad, you had to remove the entire display and send it back to Avidyne because there was no field maintenance available. And so the display actually had to be opened up and the radio card removed and then replaced. In this case, you just take the display off the panel, and the boxes from Garmin and Honeywell and PS Engineering are right behind the display, so they're really easy to get to, and you can just remove one of those boxes if you've got a bad transponder or a bad radio and replace it right there as opposed to having to replace the entire display. So it's a much cheaper, much more reliable system than what we had previously.
Okay. And you guys are also working on the pedo fix.
Yep. The design is done. We've now done the flight test to confirm it, and we're getting production parts in, and we expect to be able to retrofit that into the fleet within just a few weeks.
What's the gist of the fix on the pedo tube?
It was a combination of installation problems and PDOT design. And, you know, near as we can figure, even though we had well over 4,000 hours on the airplane before we found this problem, is it probably is, to be very blunt, the result of doing most of our flight test work in the Southwest where there was no humidity. We didn't start seeing the problem show up really until we started operating the aircraft extensively in places like Florida and in the upper Midwest where there was a lot of humidity, and we got into the time of the year where there was humidity. So this is a classic example, and, you know, we're far from the first new airplane to have to go through something like this. It's a classic example where no matter how much you try to test things, sometimes you miss something, and we just plain missed this on the design. And the system is susceptible to condensation, which then freezes at altitude. Not actually a PDOT icing up, it's condensation inside the PDOT system, which then ices up inside the system. So this is not a flight into known icing issue, it's just the opposite, as a matter of fact.
Speaking of flight into known icing, when do you think you guys will be done with flight into known icing condition approval?
We're still targeting the end of this year.
Let's talk about production rates and deliveries. Uh-huh. What do you guys think you're going to get the production rate up to by the end of the year?
Well, by the end of the year, we would expect to see a rate that's at least at one aircraft per day, and it'll probably be measurably higher than that.
Now, deliveries, what do you expect to see at the end of the year?
In terms of rate of deliveries?
Of year-end deliveries for 2006.
We're not going to call a number on that right now. It's just, you know, the reality, and we've been very upfront about this as opposed to some of the other manufacturers, the reality is that, you know, we have stumbled, we've had troubles, we're working through those problems, we're making lots and lots and lots of great progress. We'll report at the end of June, you know, exactly how many aircraft we did in second quarter, so just like everybody in the industry, we reported into Gamma as to what our productions, our deliveries, to be more precise, deliveries are in any given quarter, and we'll be reporting that at the end of next month. So I think a lot of the cheerleaders for our failure are going to be disappointed with what we report, and some of the cheerleaders for our success will also be disappointed. So it's somewhere in between, which is always the reality of life.
The Eclipse project's been a pretty ambitious endeavor. Can you just talk a little bit about maybe some 2020 hindsight into the whole process?
I don't fully agree with the characterization that it's been that ambitious. I mean, when you look at what we set out to do, which was to fundamentally change the value proposition, by that I mean we set as a corporate objective, as a business objective, that what we wanted to do was offer a capability in every dimension: speed, safety, ease of operation, cost of operation, cost of acquisition. We wanted to set a new benchmark, which, because we believe very simply that if we could do that, if we could achieve that as objectives, the market would respond appropriately. And the market would respond like all markets always respond to a better value, which is they grow. And, you know, you take a lot of market share. You can't do that with a small 5% incremental change. And in fact, if you look at the history of general aviation, and in particular startup companies in general aviation, probably the most damning indictment of all the previous attempts is that, with a few notable exceptions, and there have been some phenomenal exceptions, but with a few notable exceptions, the reason most companies fail fall into one of two categories. Either they don't have the capital, which is actually what kills most companies, or two, the product they build just isn't enough better than the products they're competing with. So to say this is a phenomenally ambitious program, I would characterize it more as it's a phenomenally balanced program, in the sense of what the objectives were and what we had to do to ensure ourselves success. It also meant we had to raise a lot of money. We've raised more money than pretty much all the other startups combined. And it also meant that we had to have a very, very significant bar that we had to get over in terms of all the aspects that I talked about earlier: performance, ease of operation, safety, acquisition cost, ownership cost. And we think we're very, very, very far along. In fact, we're more than 95% of the way towards delivering on exactly all those objectives. That in turn necessitated things like a new engine, a new avionics system, a new way to build airplanes, new business models, and everything from supply chain to capital management. And it also necessitated recognizing that if we were to deliver, particularly on the latter part of that, you know, sort of cost of ownership and ease of ownership, it necessitated a whole new part of a whole new approach to the customer experience, what we call the customer experience, much akin to or alike to the way when Lexus introduced their cars into the marketplace, they weren't necessarily better than Mercedes, they were a little bit cheaper, but they radically redefined the customer experience, and that's the next phase that Eclipse has moved into now, which is how we treat customers and how we deal with customers. So, you know, is there any 2020 hindsight? I think the 2020 hindsight is probably falls into two groups. One is that, you know, we have unfortunately had at least our share of vendors who've made lots of promises and not delivered on those promises. And since, as a company, we don't manufacture things, we depend on our vendors to manufacture things, that's put us at risk, and we've had to deal with that. And those battles and those problems are, at best, infamous. And at worst, they would have killed other companies, but they didn't kill Eclipse. And so when I talk about Eclipse surviving, that's part of the reason I have a lot of confidence in that. And the second thing, from a hindsight, is we had to do exactly what we planned to do to achieve the objectives. There was no other alternative. We couldn't have said, oh, let's just, you know, throw a FJ-44 on the airplane, because if we had, we would have just ended up producing a CJ-1. And Cessna does a pretty damn good job of producing CJ-1s. We couldn't have just said, oh, let's just do a normal cockpit suite, because that would have been a Collins Proline. And Collins does a great job of producing the Proline. But we wanted to bring the capability of something like an easy system or a plane view down into a price point and a category of performance that's never been achieved before. So we were forced to go and do those things. And everything from not only the avionics, but the electric system of the aircraft, the way we control the aircraft completely digitally, to the way we design actuators. So across the board, we had to take the steps that we did to achieve the objectives that we set out. So that was a very congruous approach. Unfortunately, we stumbled on a few occasions, and more unfortunately, some of our vendors stumbled very badly. That's, I guess, part of the program.
But it seems like you're on track right now.
I think we're feeling pretty good right now. Now, keep in mind, it's never over. There's never going to be an easy day. And anybody who's in business who thinks that it suddenly becomes autopilot and you can go play golf every afternoon or, you know, take off for 3 weeks at a time, that's not the way business works. And I don't care if you're CEO of General Electric or Boeing or, you know, mom-and-pop printing shop. Business is hard, and it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of effort. And the only people who really work 8 to 5 are the people who get paid by the hour, and then they get to go home.
Eclipse Aviation President and CEO Vern Rayburn. The world's best website for general aviation news and information is avweb.com. 24/7 updates. Breaking news stories are now posted on avweb.com, right on the homepage as they happen in a fresh, new, easy-to-navigate format. Plus, you can subscribe free of charge, and we promise we won't spam you for the news alerts. E-bulletins on significant news will be sent to Avweb Flash subscribers, alerting you to important developments as they occur. Comments on this audiocast welcome at audionews@avweb.com. And this report was brought to you by Aviation Consumer Magazine, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. Look for AvWeb's next audiocast on Monday, June 4th. I'm Mike Blakeney for AvWeb Audio. Thanks for listening.